thanks a lot. I'm just going to push this away, right? Thanks a lot for, okay. Thanks for having me. You don't have to bear with me. I'm getting over a cold, so I might be reaching for my water bottle and clearing my throat a little bit. I might sound a little strange, but we'll be in John chapter 13. This is a pretty famous passage that we grow up with. It's John's account of the Lord's Supper. And it's Jesus washing his disciples' feet. There's a really classic picture of the love that Christ has for his creatures. It's a really unique picture because it's the creator of the universe dusting the feet off, washing the feet off of his creatures. Or well, the dirt off of the feet of his creatures. He's not washing their feet off. But as we look at this, I'm going to go ahead and ease fears. I'm not going to walk around and wash your feet. Okay? That may be one way that I could illustrate the impact of this passage or whatnot. That wouldn't really have much of an effect, would it, other than it might clean some feet. There'd be nothing truly remarkable about it. In fact, I could go home and wash my roommate's feet, and they are very stinky. Someone mistook it for sewage the other day. He really needs his feet washed. But if I did that, all I would be doing maybe keeping our house from smelling like sewage for a little while. Other than that, I wouldn't really be doing anything. Same would have been true for any regular Joe in first century Palestine. If they went and washed somebody's feet in the upper room here, like Jesus is doing, wouldn't have mattered a whole lot. But the fact that it's Jesus doing this is remarkable enough that John figures he'll substitute the normal account of the bread and the wine for Jesus washing his disciples' feet. And so why is that? I remember 2 summers ago I was working at a youth camp just for 1 week because I was interning with this church. And every night I got to go over the lesson after worship with a few of the youth. And there were 2 guys there who had real problems with the faith. They were intellectual problems. These guys, one of them I remember distinctly, he said, Tyler, I've never seen a miracle. And so I don't even know if miracles are possible, let alone that God exists to perform them. And it didn't dawn on me then, like it did this week, that he was working with a really narrow conception of what a miracle is. Because what John is doing in John 13 is he's recording a miracle for us. Is anyone else washing the disciples' feet, it would have been normal, it wouldn't have been unremarkable, but Jesus does it. When it's his actions, when he's doing this normal mundane activity, all of a sudden it's a miracle. Why is that? Because everything Jesus does is part of this message that he embodies, demonstrates, and proclaims. It's about this new kingdom of his. It's about this new creation that he is inaugurating. Because it's revealing something about who God is. It's revealing something about his love towards us. That when he does this, it's revealing God to us. It's showing us God's love. And in that sense, it's a miracle. So as we go to the text, let me read it for us. Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, when the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garments, and taking a towel, he tied it around his waist. And then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, do you wash my feet? Jesus answered him, What I'm doing you don't understand now, but afterward you will understand. And Peter said to him, You shall never wash my feet. Jesus answered him, If I don't wash your feet, you have no share with me. And Simon Peter said to him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. And Jesus said to him, The one who is bathed does not need to wash, except for his feet, but is completely clean. And you are clean, but not every one of you, for he knew who was to betray him. That's why he said, Not all of you are clean. When he washed their feet and put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, Do you understand what I've done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought also to wash one another's feet. For I've given you an example that you should also do just as I have shown you. Truly I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. So you see, picture this, okay? Everyone up to this point has been enjoying this meal. And all of a sudden, in the middle of things, their teacher, Jesus, gets up and starts taking off his clothes. Now, this would have been weird, okay, for any of us to witness. But they've seen some pretty weird things up to this point. They've seen Jesus walk on water. They've seen him heal lepers, lame people, blind people. They've seen him feed 5,000 people with 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. They've even seen him raise a man from the dead. So they're used to the extraordinary with Jesus. So if I'm a disciple, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, Jesus is taking off his clothes. I'm not going to freak out. I'm just going to go with it. Okay? He's done some weird stuff up to this point. I'm going to trust him. All of them do this and let him wash their feet until, of course, he gets to Peter. And Peter has to pipe up because Peter does this. He does it so much that all four Gospels have something about Peter opening his mouth at the wrong moment and sticking his foot in that mouth. So he doesn't fail us here. Okay? He pipes up and he says, "You're going to wash my feet?" Now, this isn't a question of curiosity. He's not really wondering if Jesus is going to do this. He's just seen Jesus wash all the other disciples' feet. So it's really kind of an indictment on all the other disciples. Like, they should have spoken up. And Jesus tells him, "You're not going to understand right now, but just wait for it. Wait for it. You'll get it in a second." This doesn't stop Peter, though. He pipes back up and he says, "No, you're never going to wash my feet." Well, Peter's response, okay, is our natural response to grace. Okay, this is just our natural response to God's love that when it's demonstrated in grace. It's one of petulance. It's one of indignation. And we just naturally reject it. Just consider how we typically think about service, okay? You go to Burger King, and they tell you, "Have it your way." And you're thinking, "Well, I think I will. Thank you very much," right? You go to a restaurant, and you expect certain things of your server because you've been conditioned in our free market society to think of service in terms of transaction. Well, what Jesus is interested in is not service in terms of transaction, but service in terms of transformation. And so we need to get rid of our economic conceptions of service. Because just think of it this way, too. When someone says to you, or when someone takes your shift at work, okay, or covers for you, or helps you out with a project, or maybe they make you dinner, immediately, what's our response? "I owe you one." We immediately start thinking in terms of debt, don't we? Like, we have to reciprocate in order for it to be okay, or there's something wrong there. Well, we do this out of pride. That's what Peter objected to. He objected out of pride. But the problem is that it was with pride that the serpent in the garden, the very beginning of the story, lies to Adam and Eve, promising exaltation out of pride. And they buy into that, and it leads to them being demoted significantly. It leads to their destruction. But here, Jesus is trying to show them that what Satan did with pride, I'm going to undo with humility. It's this antithesis. And so he tells him, he says, well, I'm jumping ahead of myself. Let's stick on this for a second with his pride, because I think this is important. Naturally, just consider the ways that we serve one another, okay? This looks different for everyone depending on your gifts and your talents and maybe what your personality is like. But I think if we were to take a poll in here, most of us would probably settle on the fact that most of us give in terms of either our time, our resources, our emotions, our actions. I mean, these are the things that we normally serve others with, correct? And most of us love to serve. Like, that's not such a bad thing. Like we naturally love to serve others because we like to help people. This is good. This is part of the image of God within us. A friend of mine even refers to it as a fix. Like, he gets a fix off of serving people, right? And I think a lot of us may even resonate with that. The problem with that is that you get a fix from drugs, okay? And I don't know many people that do drugs because they love other people so much, okay? I've never known someone who just does cocaine because of their overwhelming love for their neighbor. When we think of service in terms of that, we're really thinking of it in terms of self-service, right? It's self-serving service. Because there are any number of ways that we would serve other people that we would not even dare fathom letting them serve us. So let's say you're a good listener, and you're going to sit there and you let people open up to you, just spill their guts, and they just tell you everything that's going on in their lives, and you have this excellent ability to just listen and hear them and help them with these issues, and you keep all your problems to yourself. You would never do that. You would never open up to them. Or maybe you're a people pleaser. And so you like to sort of sit back and make sure everyone else gets their way because everyone else being happy results in your happiness. But you don't ever let it cut the other way. You don't ever let your way, let the circumstances be such that you get your way. You deny that from other people. At my church, we have community groups. And I remember when I first joined one of these, we had a man and a woman. They were married. They were serving us. And immediately, they started finding ways to serve me self-sacrificially. And I've got a dietary disorder, and so I can't eat anything with gluten in it, which means I can't have anything with bread. I can't have a whole lot of stuff. Right? It's really hard to cook for me. But what the wife would do is she would find ways to make me something, or to alter her recipes, because we'd always have dessert before we got into our Bible study, and so she would always just find ways to make me something. And then other people in the group started doing this, and it just humbled the snot out of me. And I used to have a big problem with letting people cook for me, right? I just like, don't worry about me. I'm just going to do my own thing. But I started to realize as I was thinking through this text, like that's just my pride at work because I suddenly feel indebted to them. And this is just sin, all right? It's just blatant pride speaking up. And what service does to us is it naturally humbles us, right? It fights our pride. That's why we're so resistant to it. It's because we'd rather hold on to our pride than be humbled. I mean, and you can just think about this. It happens in any number of ways. That we just hold, we grasp on to our pride as if it's just something to be prized almost. You see, gospel-minded service is one way the gospel breaks into the darkness of our lives. And because it fights our pride. This is one of the reasons why resisting it is so deadly, as Jesus tells Peter. He says, if I don't wash you, you have no share with me. And right here, Peter finds out this isn't about stinky feet, okay? This is about something more. Jesus is doing something special here. Again, I shouldn't have spoken up. And so he quickly acquiesces, right? He relents and he says, Lord, don't just wash my feet, also wash my hands and my head. And he's just like going overboard, right? All right? He's just like, man, baptize me again, all right? Or I just want to get under the water. I need a full bath now. You see, what's going on is that this is about more than dirty feet. It's about the cross. It's about whether or not he's clean, whether or not he has a part with Jesus. This entire movement of redemption is so big for John. We see it right when we look in chapter 1, right? The word becomes flesh. It's this movement from God to man, from heaven to earth, from word to flesh, all right? What he's doing here, he knows that he's come from the Father. He knows he's going back, and yet he humbles himself this way. It immediately calls up that passage we read a minute ago, Philippians 2. What happens there? God does not consider it something to be, Jesus does not consider the form of God something to be used to his advantage, something to be grasped. So what does he do? He assumes flesh. He takes off his outer garments. This is an allusion here to the entire secret of the incarnation. What does he do? He grabs a towel and wraps it around his waist. He humbles himself by taking on the form of a servant. The entire reason Jesus came is being hinted at right here. It's being thrown right in our faces. And that's why resisting it is so dangerous. See, what does Paul say is the reason Jesus does this? He's being obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. This is all about the cross. And Jesus is trying to help his disciples understand that. Because if they have a problem with him on the washing their feet, they're going to have an even bigger problem with him on the cross. And so he says, you have no part with me if you're not going to allow this. And this is why Peter's objection to being served is so serious. Because when we have difficulty, we have a problem with letting others serve us out of Christian love, out of humbling themselves on our behalf, and giving to us sacrificially their time, their resources, their energy, we have a problem with Jesus on the cross. Okay, that's not a far-fetched, shocked statement. It's just blatantly here. That's why Jesus is warning Peter about this. Why is that? Because the cross is what defeats our sin. It's what defeated our sin. It's what enables us to love others like Christ loves us. And there it is. When God, okay, works in our hearts and changes us, he enables us to love others like he loves them. And in this respect, that right there is what enables us to perform these little miracles that reveal God's love to other people when we serve them. There's something about selfless, humble, just service that doesn't expect anything in return that just cuts against our natural way of thinking, right? We see somebody do that, we're thinking, where's the string? Okay, what's the hook? What's the catch? And when there's not any catch, we think, that's just weird. That's out of step with what normally goes on in our world. Just open the papers. Turn on the news. Just walk around your street. This is not the way things go. It's not natural. That's why this is really supernatural. That's why it really is a miracle. I know that sounds Hallmarkish, but just think about it. It's the truth. Selfless, gospel-centered service is a miracle. And notice when Jesus says, not all of you are clean. See, Judas is sitting there, just like all the other disciples, and he lets Jesus wash his feet, but he's holding on to his pride. He's not letting himself be humbled. You see, we can be served and at the same time hold on to our pride. We can resist gospel service at the risk of resisting the gospel. This is what's wrong with Judas. He's washed, but he's not clean. And service can have a way of judging us because it'll harden us in our pride if we don't watch it. Jesus doesn't wash Judas's feet to get back at him, though. Okay, and this is what we would do, right? I mean, we think of service as in terms of payback all the time. Like, well, so-and-so said this about me behind my back, and I know what their thoughts really are towards me, and so if I'm going to humble myself before them, I'm going to show them. Like, they're going to feel so bad. They're going to feel like a rotten rat, okay? They're just going to feel so bad about it because they're going to realize how nice I am, and that temptation should have been there for Jesus, right? If you knew the night before someone was going to give the keys to your house to a murderous band of robbers, okay? You knew who that person was, and they were sitting there at like your own dinner party, would you be serving them hand and foot? Would you be washing their feet? Performing the task of a slave? No. And Jesus isn't doing it to keep burning coals on Jesus' head. That, of course, happens, okay? As we find out from the other gospel writers, because Judas ends up killing himself, okay, out of remorse. But that's not Jesus' motivating factor. Jesus' motivating factor is the love of God. The love of God does not discriminate against enemies. And when we use this heaping coals on people's heads as like a motivating factor for our service towards others, we take the example that the New Testament enjoins upon us to follow of Christ's humility, and we turn it into a weapon. And we use it as a means to dominate people. And that is just sick. Jesus is not a weapon. And his example to us is anything but a weapon. The love of God is revealed here as a love that does not discriminate against enemies. So Jesus closes it out by saying, you guys call me Lord and teacher. Okay? And if that's the case, then you're my disciple. And if that's the case, then I've given you an example and you were to follow it. The right to be called a disciple of Jesus Christ is not yours just de facto. It doesn't belong to any of us because we show up to church or because we believe the gospel or because we believe certain things about Jesus. We can all sit here, okay, in church, say amen, sing all the right songs, read our Bibles every day, and not make one bit of difference in how we respond to the gospel. Because the gospel, responding to the gospel is about so much more than just believing the right things and thinking good feelings about Jesus. Judas did that much, right? Judas thought well of Christ, even after he betrayed him. This is what led him. This is what swelled up all that grief and led him to kill himself. But it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. Better for him that he had never been born, Jesus says. See, Judas tells us everything about how we should respond to the gospel. And Jesus uses him subtly as an example here, because he tells them, he said, you guys know these things. He doesn't say, okay, you guys know these things, you're blessed. No, what does he say? If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. The gospel demands a response and a following after the example of Christ, an imitation of Christ's work. And so we have to ask ourselves, the sad fact of the matter is, okay, is that when people say, I've never seen a miracle, part of the blame for that falls on us if we've never shown them the love of Christ. If we've never been the conduit, the vehicle through which God displays a miracle to them, through which he reveals himself to them. Your life should be a holistic argument for the fact that Christ crucified is the answer to everything. And if it's not, then what is it an argument for? I mean, do we humble ourselves before the people? Do we serve them self-sacrificially in an attempt to show them Christ? Or do we do it as a means to glorify ourselves, to get a fix, or to show other people what's up? Because that's not the example the New Testament gives us. The New Testament gives us an example of showing God's love to people in such a way it has no interest for yourself. It has no interest for what you have to gain. It's not something to be wielded. It's not a weapon. It rather humbles you. It's a means of the gospel being preached to you and being preached through you. So you have to ask yourself, if you were to go serve somebody, in whatever capacity that would it be unremarkable or would it be remarkable? Would it be something that we just say, that looks normal? Or would somebody stop and say, that looks like a miracle because it's so out of the ordinary? Let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, we resist service all the time because we are just prideful people at heart. And I know this is true of me. And this text spoke volumes to me, and I'm still struggling with how to work it all out. And I know that for those here that truly received your word, it's gonna require a little bit of wrestling with how to let this impact our lives, Lord. And I pray that your spirit would move within people to appropriate this so that we aren't merely people looking out, holding on to our pride, and letting the gospel transform the world around us and not transform us. But Lord, that we would let the gospel work through us so that we can be part of that transformation. And Lord, I pray that we would look at service through a gospel lens, and that we would see, first of all, your Son on the cross, then raised again and ascended on high. And that we would see the purpose of that entire event of Christ coming to rescue us from our natural tendencies and to give us a better way, to show people your love and to bring about your kingdom, Lord, and that we would earnestly